comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time tonight. Welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. If you haven't subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do. That's open to anyone on planet Earth. Well, actually, I guess on any other planet, as long as they can pick up in our internet, they can pick up K-Files e-zine. All you have to do is go over to my website and click on the button that says K-Files e-zine and subscribe. Now, you'll get a confirmation email, and when you get the confirmation email, there's a link, and you have to click that link and confirm that you really did intend to subscribe. Now, it's free, but you have to confirm that you actually wanted to subscribe in order to activate your subscription. And you do that, you're in. The whole thing takes about 10 seconds. So, well, depends. If you hunt and peck in order to type in your first name and your email address, maybe it could take you 20 seconds. But it's quick, all right, and it's absolutely free. All right, I get email all the time. I read all the email that gets to me, and I reply to most of it as time permits. And I received an email today from one of our listeners. He's been a guest on this show, Jeff Vance. This email contained a link. Jeff, I got your email, and I clicked the link. And I watched the video, and I have to say I was truly, truly stunned. After watching this video, I checked out some of the information that was in the video. This video translated something. Actually, what it did, there's something that's in the Bible. And this video gave the Hebrew words for what is there in English. You understand it was originally written, the original language that was spoken at the time this was written was Aramaic. But the language that was the official language for Jesus and the other Hebrews was the Hebrew language. Anyway, I don't want to get too hairy here. I checked out what it said, what the video said, and that video is correct. And I have to say that it was scary enough for me to mention it here. It steps outside of our genre, so I won't be doing a show on it. But I won't repeat it here. But it is right on target. It says what the video says it says. Folks, if you get an email from Jeff Vance and it has a link to a video, you need to watch it. We'll be back with Red Moon, Looming of a New World Order, written by Ron Riles, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest for this evening, Ron Riles. Ron Riles is an author, and he's written a book called Red Moon, Looming of a New World Order. Ron is a resident of the same valley in which I live. I live on the east side of this valley. They call it the Valley of the Sun. He lives on the west side of the valley, the north, sort of northwest side. And Ron is with us tonight for the very first time. It's the first time we've talked with him on the show. Ron, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hi, Kevin.
Ron, I've made some adjustments in volume here this evening, so I'm not real sure that I got it right. I'll have to adjust it as we go.
Yeah,
but hopefully you are able to hear me okay.
Yeah, it's very, it's kind of a little bit dim. I can, may have to turn it up a little bit.
All right. Now, Ron, you wrote this book, Red Moon, Looming of a New World Order. You have your bachelor's degree is in psychology.
Right.
And you get up and go to work every day.
Yeah.
What possessed you to write a book that has a title like that?
Well, it was like 1991. It was kind of a spur of the moment thing, but I think it was based on an earlier experience I had when I was around 17 years old, and I was in high school then, and I was just going to bed, and my window, it was right next to my bed, it was parallel to the bed, and for some reason I had the impulse to look out the window. It was like an automatic thing, and when I opened the curtains back, I saw this red, orange, disc-like craft come into view. It was moving, and then it stopped, and it saw me, and I sensed that it was aware of me, and I immediately closed the curtains. I was kind of freaked out, but a couple 3 seconds later, I just had the courage to open up again, and it moved on over the next hill. And I think he said when I had remembered that when on that day that I decided to write the book. So I think that I wanted to know more about the UFO phenomena.
All right, now how old were you when this happened?
I think about 17 years old. It was about 1964 or 65.
Mm-hmm.
And for some strange reason, so I knew this was not no helicopter. I'd gone through my own reasoning then. It wasn't a helicopter, it wasn't a plane, it wasn't searchlights, it wasn't anything that I could discern, anything that's what you call terrestrial. But this thing stopped immediately. I knew it was something other than anything we had on Earth. That night I had a sleepless dream. I mean, just like I went to bed and I woke up, it was just like almost instantaneously. No time had passed. But I had, but for some reason I was not what you call curious. I didn't go out and buy UFO books or anything else. I just went on with the rest of my life. I haven't seen any. I didn't see anything. But I kept an open mind, of course, about things. I knew, there was probably some visitations, but I was not preoccupied in that sense.
All right, I want to share with our listeners the plot of your book as is presented on your book's website. And I want people to get a little bit of the heartbeat of this book, and then they'll understand why I was interested in having you come on and talk with us. Here it is, folks. This is the synopsis of Red Moon Looming of a New World Order. Dr. Jennifer Bentley recently completed her government residency obligation as a physician for the American Indians near their Nevada reservation. After being selected to do genetic research for the federal government, Jennifer is excited about this new chapter in her future, even though it will take place at a secret military installation. When Jennifer arrives at a U.S. Air Force base to be briefed, she is unprepared for the seemingly sci-fi specifics of her new job. General Dan Graves informs her that she will be conducting medical research on the genetics of extraterrestrials. Both excited at the positive possibilities and the potential fallout, Jennifer travels to the military base confident that she can use her skills to make a difference in the world of science. But the underground installation in the Mojave Desert is nothing like she expected, and what was once a place full of promise becomes a chamber of unspeakable horrors. Now, Jennifer and General Graves must fight to keep the deadly secret that could very well threaten the entire world, buried deep beneath the desert floor. Ron, I got to tell you, just from reading the synopsis of your book, I would say, if nothing else, the plot of this thing ought to sell to some movie producer who wants to turn it into a movie. This would be a great sci-fi plot.
Oh, yeah, many people have commented on the same thing. And I've hoped to get an offer one of these days.
Have you shopped it to any producers? Have you sent it?
Well, I do. I do have Ron Howard's address. I was planning to send it to him, but I've been kind of holding off. I did send Dan Aykroyd a letter of my book of what I had. Giving a brief outline of what my book is about, and of course they sent me a letter back. You know. Very courteous letter saying that we're not interested, or at this time we don't receive any unsolicited offers or this, basically that was the thrust of the letter.
Well, I'll tell you what, after the show, I'm going to give you a name and how to get in touch with a producer.
Oh, that'd be great.
And you need to get in touch with this producer who is in the sci-fi movie business, all right?
Oh, wow.
Ron, you and I live out here in the Phoenix area. You don't live in Phoenix, and I don't live actually in Phoenix, but we both probably tell people when they say, where do you live, we say Phoenix, because who knows, if you're not from here, you don't know where Glendale is, and you don't know where Mesa is.
Right.
And these are suburbs of Phoenix, physically attached to Phoenix. There's no space in between them. You leave Phoenix, you cross the street and you're in Glendale. You cross the street and you're in Mesa.
Oh, yes.
And by the way, folks, we have a cold front that moved through here today. We're back down to 104. And so it's really chilly. If it drops another 2 or 3 degrees, Ron, we're going to have to break out the sweaters.
Yeah, definitely. I can feel the difference just with 5 or 6 degrees. You know, it's strange how it happens. I mean, you can feel the difference.
Well, over in Phoenix, this past Monday a week ago, Jerry Wills at his house registered 120 degrees.
You know Jerry Wills?
Yes, I do.
Oh, I know.
Quite well.
For years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Jerry very well.
Uh-huh.
All right. Now let's get back to the plot of this book. You obviously had to do some research and some investigation to come up with the details for this book. In doing that research, what did you discover? Did you find information about actual underground military bases? Did you find information about experiments with extraterrestrials?
Yes. First, I started doing the research. I did about 4 or 5 months research before I even began to, writing the book. And actually, I was still writing the book, all along as I was doing my research. So things just came to me. But, Bob Lazar was, I bought one of his videos, and he had described a secret installation called S4, as well as Area 51. But Area 51 is practically known to a great many people. But S4 is one of the least known installations. But there was a combination of readings of I got from like the Dulce underground base. Bill Hamilton had done some research and some writings on that, and I think this guy's name was Benowitz. And
Paul Benowitz.
Familiar with Benowitz?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And his description of the underground installations, you know, it goes down 7 levels. Doing biological research, it's and they found some kind of really some strange genetic. The description of it was that they found some really strange combination of animal and human genetic manipulation experiments. I mean, some monstrosities, you might say. So that was, which is a pretty scary picture if you can envision that. So anyway, I looked at Bob Lazar. A lot of stuff I learned from Bob Lazar and his testimony. I know he his credibility was in question because nobody can prove that he was worked at any of these installations, but...
Well, let me update you on that. It was, in fact, proved that he was at Los Alamos.
Oh, yes.
They denied it. They said he never worked there, and George Knapp came up with an internal telephone directory, an internal telephone list for Los Alamos, and there was Bob Lazar with an extension number. Yes, his credibility was questioned, but now, quite honestly, and at this, I'm not saying that Bob Lazar was 100% accurate, but let me say this, anyone who gets into the UFO field is going to have their credibility questioned by people who are paid to question credibility.
Oh, yeah.
But they will also have it questioned by other UFO researchers. The fact that somebody's credibility is questioned, that doesn't bother me. That just tells me that they must be hitting close to the target.
Yeah, they go through a disinformation campaign to discredit anybody who gets close to the truth. And of course, they try that, and if that doesn't work, there's been some researchers that have disappeared or died mysteriously under circumstances. That was a problem with that. I mean, this people would like to believe that that the government tells them the truth about everything, but that's not the case.
Well, it's true. The government tells us the truth about many things. But the government uses cover stories on many other things. And a cover story is a euphemism. Out here in the normal world, we call that a lie. And but there are reasons why, in many cases, there are reasons, good reasons, why you need to use a cover story. In some cases, they probably are using cover stories where none really should be used.
Right.
But, Paul Benowitz. One of the things that I've said before when people say, you know, well, the government is lying to us, one of the things I say is, of course they are. That's what you pay them to do. It should be no surprise to us. We pay, you know, we have this thing called the CIA. Well, do you think we're paying them to spill the beans on everything?
Oh,
you know, we have this thing called the NSA. We tell them, if you spill the beans, we'll put you under the jail. You know, both the NSA and the CIA, the FBI, the DEA, the DIA, and all the other alphabets. We have these very stringent laws that, that say if you spill the beans on something that should be secret, we'll throw you under the jail. So, yeah, we're paying them to lie to us.
Well, tax money, of course, through other probably illicit funding, but won't comment on that.
Well, I think sometimes things get classified that really shouldn't be.
Definitely, especially when it comes to, I think that's one thing about the UFO thing is that people, if they would admit that there were extraterrestrials visiting this Earth, and they would quite probably come into question why we have an exchange of technology and why are we still, you know, burning fossil fuels, and then the things about free energy would come about, the discussion about free energy, electromagnetic energy, and that would bring the whole thing a lot of questions, which would probably threaten the oil industry, the fossil fuel industry.
Well, that's true, and if you actually threaten the or disturb the fossil fuel industry, you are at that point disturbing the economies of 100% of the countries on the planet.
Oh yeah.
And so it is big. It is big. Look, we've got about 30 seconds here before we have to take a break.
Okay.
And when we come back from this break, I want to get into this New World Order aspect of what you've written. I know what you wrote was a novel, but you based it on things that you found in your research.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get into the New World Order aspect of it. And some people say that the whole UFO thing is all about New World Order. Some people say that's not true, there's no New World Order in it, and that the New World Order is actually threatened by the UFO phenomena. So we'll talk about that when we come back from this break. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest this evening, Ron Riles. Ron, let's talk about this New World Order thing just a little bit. You know, I've been doing this show now for 9 years, and the New World Order, all of that information about the New World Order started hitting the internet really prior to George Bush, number one, using that phrase in a speech.
Mm-hmm.
People started talking about it. It was on the internet, and people were interested in it, and it was hot stuff. And then whenever George Bush one made the speech where he said this is not about just the interests of nations, you know, but this is about a whole new world order, then it took off like a rocket.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, you know, the New World Order information really soaked the internet then. And it hasn't stopped. But the interesting thing here about to me, as I look at this whole panoply of information about UFOs and New World Order. The interesting thing to me, from a journalistic point of view, is that you have one group who says, you know, this whole UFO phenomena and our interacting with UFOs and so forth, that's all the New World Order crowd. That's all the Illuminati New World Order crowd, and that's having contact with these UFOs. And they are the ones that are doing all these horrific experiments that we've heard about. Mm-hmm. There's another group that says, oh, that's not true. That's a disinformation campaign so that we will not trust these extraterrestrials. And it's the New World Order that's actually doing the disinformation campaign, saying that it's New World Order having contact with the UFOs. That's so we won't trust the UFO guys.
Mm-hmm.
We have people that come in and say, we have guests that come on and callers from the audience that come on, talk about the New World Order and Illuminati as though it's all evil. And I have to say, that's the vast majority opinion in my audience and among the guests that I have on. But I have guests who have been on this show, one last week, who says that's not true. These New World Order people are they are looking out for the interests of humankind. And it's a disinformation campaign against them to say that they're evil. And so you have this big mixture of information. I am not undecided about what I think about it, but I approach it journalistically, and I'd like to hear, based on your research, what do you think?
No, that is an interesting aspect. Interesting question. I think there's several approaches to this New World Order, and of course, I think the financial economy is one of them, but that goes into a whole quagmire of things. In my book, I remember watching and reading also a book on the Japanese film crew who had visited Area 51. And, of course, they were harassed by these black helicopters. And, of course, they filmed a lot of interesting moving lights in the sky, some of them doing some really strange maneuvers. But he had made a comment that one of the New World Order things that would come about would be a fake alien invasion, and that was when. And this is really strange that I forgot her name, but she worked with Von Braun.
Yeah, I've seen that video where she's talking about that, and Von Braun mentions that.
Okay, I can't hear you right now.
I said Von Braun mentioned that as well.
Oh yes. Right, exactly. The secretary, like I said, secretary, I forgot what her name is, but she had relayed information what Von Braun had told her, that there would be some stages of two with this New World Order, and it would bring it about by, one would be the act of terrorism, the terrorist thing. And another one would be a scare about an asteroid impact. And then the next one would be an alien invasion, but it would be a hoaxed alien invasion to create panic so they'll be able to rely on the government to tell them, just like the Patriot Act, when they took a lot of our rights away, we'd be willing to give our rights away for protection, for security. And of course, that's a good ploy to use. I think that's, of course, that's an old ploy they've used for centuries, I believe. You know, to scare, to confuse, and to put people in fear so they can have more control.
So, as you did this research, you found out a lot of this information. And from what you're telling me, or the way you're saying it, it sounds like you've come down on the side of the fence that says the New World Order is a reality and it's not good. Am I correct?
Well, no. I mean, it depends on what brand of New World Order we're going to have. And I think there are factions within this power elite that are struggling. The Bilderberger Group is, I guess, is one of those things, but that's like the financial end. But they may have they probably have their hands in with the black projects, you know, funding the black projects. I'm sure the bankers, all the central banks, and the people in the know of the CEOs of major corporations and bankers also are aware of what's really going on. Not just the Pentagon. So, I think there's warring factions right now, which way they want to pull, and also there is a struggle between the East and West of the have you ever heard of a guy named Fulford?
Sure, Benjamin Fulford.
Benjamin,
yeah.
Fulford.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But according to his information, the Chinese and some of the West and Russia and some of the Eastern powers are not cooperating. They don't want to go the direction in which the Western European and the Americas, the United States, want to go. I mean, as far as the control, who controls the economy, and there's a power struggle within that. So. It is like a tug of war. It seems to me it's a stalemate. The only thing that is affecting us now is the economy, and I think that's gotten out of control. But like I said, the economy is tied in with all this. Everything is connected together. I find out everything is linked to one thing or another, and you can't. Say that one thing is the answer or the cause of the bringing about this new world, or there's different directions they're going to be approaching from.
Okay, now in your book, though, you have approached the subject of the new world order from the standpoint of they are the bad guys in
mm-hmm.
your book, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, this is the faction, the bad guy faction, yes.
You know, you're not the first person I've heard this from. I've heard this from two or three other guests about these factions within the New World Order crowd, and that mm-hmm. some are bad guys and some are good guys that are trying to bring about something that would be good for us. And that would be normal because among the human race at large, we know we have a certain percentage of narcissists who are really only interested in themselves and mm-hmm. getting their way. And these are in every corporation. These are in every government agency. And then you have some good people. All right, so in your book... we have Dr. Jennifer Bentley, who's gone to this secret underground base out in the Mojave Desert. And her job is to do genetic experimentation and research on the extraterrestrials.
Right. It was part of the book here, one of the, you might say, thoughts on this thing is that she was... it was kind of like a reverse thing. You have alien abductions, aliens abducting people, and extracting their DNA so they can upgrade their failing biological forms. Here we have the reverse. We have she's experiment, or the people at S4 are experimenting the other way, which they're trying to weave into, or genetic splicing with human and alien to create a super soldier. And this is one of the plots of the book, is to for the New World Order, is create a super soldier where you have totally obedient type of people, where they don't have any conscience about following orders, you know, questioning orders, but also endow them with some kind of psychic ability. So that is one approach I use in the book. Another one is, of course, cloning process of some of the leaders and major news media, and the cloning process, and then replacing some of our leadership with duplicates, you might say.
Okay, in your research for the book, did you run across any credible information that experiments like that either have taken place or are taking place?
Well, I would say there's no hard evidence. No, that is something that you can't really. That would very, very difficult to obtain. There's only indications or people reports, people coming out of Area 51 or some of these other bases, underground bases, S4 or whatever, that are leaking out information. And you can only go through, go by what they say. One, there was a video, too, also, a person, you ever heard of Colonel Steve, what's his name, guy who investigated the Palladians, I got his name on the tip of my tongue now, Wendell Stevens, that's what his name.
Oh, yeah, I know Wendell.
Yeah, Colonel Wendell Stevens, yeah. Mm-hmm. He interviewed a guy who, he was a guard there at Area 51, and actually there's a short video footage of these containers.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll come back right there. Don't forget where you are. And we'll pick up right there when we come back from the break. We'll be back, folks, with Ron Riles right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Ron Riles, and we had to cut him off in mid-speak because the break was taking over. Ron, you were telling us about Wendell Stevens, and you were mentioning that there is a video that shows some containers, and then we had to cut away. So pick up right there, and the floor is yours.
He had met at a very private place, Colonel Wendell Stevens and this guard who had worked at Area 51. And he had handed over some video footage of, he had smuggled out of the this underground portion of Area 51. And one of the video footage, a very short clip there, shows these containers with not only, I think, a grays, but also a Nordic type, the Nordic blonde hair, you know, human-like, extraterrestrial. So it's been a long time since I've viewed that video footage. I have it around here. I got so many books and so many videos around here. I don't know if I can even locate it anymore. But
I know what you mean. After a while, it just kind of all runs together, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I tell you, that was pretty convincing. It was really convincing, which gives a lot of credibility. But people will have to do their own investigation into this if they really want to know what's going on. They'll have to put the pieces together themselves. I mean, this can't, you might say... listen to the major media complex and get their information from that only. They'd have to build up their own curiosity and find out to get the facts for themselves, or come to conclusion, their own conclusion. And I tell you what, I don't know if you've heard of this Gary McKinnon.
Oh yeah,
the hacker that hacked into the Pentagon.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Well, it's very interesting that I read an article in the UK periodical that he had come across this idea of this information about non-terrestrial officers and a space fleet. This is some of the things he had hacked into the Pentagon. And I don't have all the information that he has found out. I just downloaded another article about him, and I'm still planning to read that. But he is still fighting extradition. He's now, they're after him. They want him to stand trial here in the United States for causing damage to the Pentagon, their computers. $5,000 for each computer, and there must be something to it, because if they didn't, they wouldn't go to so much trouble to extradite him, and he was offered three or four years in prison, and only 6 months here, and then rest served in the UK, but he wanted that in writing. They wouldn't give that to him, and so right now. His appeals have fallen through, and as far as I know, he is in hiding right now. So, as far as my information that I've gotten so far, so that is some credibility. If there wasn't anything to this, the government, with all the blanked out to also the Freedom of Information Act, where they blank out anything about some information that would be, revealing, they blank it all out. And then, they would. Why would they do that if they had one hiding something? You know.
Yeah. Well, I did not know that McKinnon was in hiding. That's the first time I've heard that. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
That's the impression I give, because I just sort of Google searched, and I didn't have to. I haven't had time to really go into any depth of that right now. But that's the impression I get right now. Nothing definite.
You know, it's interesting, isn't it, that they would not. He said, "Well, give me that in writing," and they wouldn't give it to him in writing.
Right. Yeah. Certain for these factions of government work. I mean, they. It seems like they want to shut him up permanently. And to me, they want to throw away, put him in the darkest cell and throw away the key. And that's what he's afraid of. He's facing up to 70 years imprisonment.
Well, certainly it would not be the first time that our government and other governments have used prison as a means of shutting someone up.
Oh, yeah. Well, is it... There's a $10,000 fine, or $5,000 fine for anybody who has had contact with any extraterrestrials, which is very interesting too in itself. This is like, and people, contactees have been harassed. Black helicopters come over them, over their houses. These unmarked black helicopters, you don't know where they're from. So this is really a peculiar way of shutting some people up, frightening them by intimidation.
Have you had any intimidation or harassment?
Well, it's a strange thing. No, there was only one time in the year 2000. I faxed Art Bell one time about the Phoenix Lights, and there was some kind of reason why they appeared on a 33-degree latitude, And on the time, the March 13th, 1997, mm-hmm. would you add up all the numbers, add up to 33, if you add them individual numbers of the date. And they appeared again in January 14th of 1998, which adds up to also 33. I found that pretty peculiar, and the fact that the 33-degree latitude runs right through the border between Lebanon and Israel, and all the way through, and the 33-degree goes right straight through on to Baghdad and Iraq. And I said, my gosh, is this somebody trying to tell us something? And I faxed Art Bell, that, you know, about this, and I said, I think we're going to go to war. And this was in 1998 when I faxed him. And we said, we're going to go to war with Iraq sometime in the future. And the very next day that I faxed him, I was at work. And everybody was gone because I worked the night shift, but it was around 6:30. I had four. There was two on one side and two on the other, and then they were circling the building. And they circled the building for at least 30 minutes until a police helicopter came in, and then after that they left. And I was on the phone with my wife telling her about this, and she could hear that this helicopter, you know, I mean, as plain as day over the phone because they were so loud.
Now, you're sure they were Chinook?
Yeah, there were Chinooks. I know, yeah, the Chinooks.
Mm-hmm.
And they were white.
And for our audience who may not be familiar, these are the really, really mm-hmm. large.
The double-bladed.
That's right. They got a one blade back, in the front, right. One in the back, and mm-hmm. these are heavy lift.
Usually for transport and lifting cargo and transport troops.
Yeah.
But this was really strange to use that size helicopter, too. But anyway, I was on the phone, and they left, and while I was on the phone with my wife, they heard them over my house. She heard them over my house, and they were on their way, I guess, to Luke Air Force Base. But it's really strange that they took the path and to go over my house, which was 4 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
So this was only just a few minutes later after I was talking to her, and she says, well, you know, she went outside, and I says, well, she could hear them, and she went outside, and she. Says she believed me then, you know, really, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Something was going on with that and these Phoenix lights, and that's the only time that I ever really had any kind of strange interaction, you might say, if you call it interaction, with this unknown faction or whatever it is. And Luke Air Force Base is the closest one that's base that's out here that got any kind of Chinooks.
All right, we've got a break taking over, and we'll step away for just a few minutes, and we'll be back more with Ron Riles, Red Moon Looming of a New World Order, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Ron Riles, and he is the author of a book called Red Moon, Looming of a New World Order. Ron, in your book, you have Dr. Jennifer Bentley. She gets a contract to go work for the federal government doing some genetic research on extraterrestrials in an underground base. So she becomes an insider. And then you have General Dan Graves. He is, I suppose, sort of her supervisor. And being a general, he is, of course, an insider. And these two insiders then join forces to work together to fight against the release of some really, really bad secret that they think needs to remain buried under the desert. And so whatever it is she's found out, here she is as a government insider working to keep it a secret, because to release it would be devastating to the world. Have I got that right?
Yes, that's basic. That's the basic theme of it. The secrets, though. They also in the book, though. They want to release certain information too, but the information they wanted to actually keep secret was the alien invasion, because it would be a fake alien invasion.
Mm-hmm. All right, now we've heard a lot about this. They call it a false flag operation.
Right.
We've heard a lot in the past. I would say within the past year, it has been really intense. In the waning days of the Bush administration, it got to a boiling point where I was getting emails every day, people warning, watch out, you know, it's they're about to do this false flag invasion.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, since that's in your book, you ran across that in your research. How do you grade that? Do you think that is a reality? Do you think that's really going to happen? And if so, why?
As a possibility, I think that they have contingency plans. If one doesn't work, like this financial chaos we got going on, they'll try something else. Or it's all possible. Of course, they got holographic projections they can probably use. Some people have mentioned about that. They can project a fleet of these alien craft, UFOs, or whatever you want to call them. Or they have some of their own discs, the triangular type of craft they use. I think that's basically their design.
When you say their design, who are you talking about?
About the secret, the shadow government, you might say. They have their, I think they have their own, because Gary McKinnon mentions that they have a space fleet.
Mm-hmm.
That he came across in the Pentagon, the files in the Pentagon that he hacked into, and they have quite a few of those thousands. He mentioned thousands, so that they were in the report. He never did download or kept the file. I think this is all from his memory.
Mm-hmm.
But
It is possible that there is a space fleet. There seems to be some pretty good evidence. There's someone flying up there every night. I've seen them through night vision goggles.
I'm sorry?
I've seen them through night vision goggles.
Mm-hmm.
There's a website or two out there. I'm not really sure what the source of the information is. But there are a couple of websites, and a number of websites, that say that this space fleet is called Project Solar Warden.
Solar what?
Warden.
Ah. Yeah. I haven't heard of that one, but a good name for it. But anyway, I had a thought here, and I think I lost it.
Well, I'm sorry if I made you lose your thought. Why don't we open up the telephone
lines? I'll get it back here.
All right. Well, if you do,
there's the NASA footage. Now, the STS-48, that was one of the earlier footages that were leaked out, which Hoagland believes they were leaked out on purpose. And, of course, I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
NASA's own footage, the camera was pointing down towards the Earth, and you can see all these craft moving about, and one was moving across between the ergo layer and the Earth's atmosphere. The ergo, Hoagland calls the ergo layer. And it suddenly makes a sharp angle turn and started to speed away. And then you see this streak of light come out from the surface of the Earth that just misses the UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I have that in my book about the particle beam weapon they have. And that is pretty, pretty strong evidence that they have something going, there's something going on up there. I mean, there are, I got the David Serretta's book, videos, too, also on called Evidence. And it shows about the tether that broke loose from the shuttle. They were doing an experiment. It was 10-mile long, I believe, tether. Mm-hmm. And I see all these UFOs start gathering around the tether. I mean, and moving about. I mean, there's hundreds of them. It looked like. But from the NASA's own space footage, from their video cams, shows there's a lot of activity going on out in the upper atmosphere and beyond.
Yes, indeed, there is. For sure there is. All right. Let me give the telephone numbers out. The telephone numbers to call, ladies and gentlemen, and the lines are open. 623-444-5889 is the main number. And if you need to call me on the toll-free number, it is 888-223-4599. Again, 888-223-4599. That's the toll-free number. If you live outside of the USA and you live outside of Canada, you can avail yourself of those numbers, or you can avail yourself of our link called Flash Message. You just go to my website, click where it says Flash Message, and you can send me your comments or questions that way. If you're outside the USA and Canada, if you're in the USA and you're in Canada, please use the telephone numbers, okay? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. I wanted to ask Ron a question. It sounds like a really good book, and I think I'm going to pick it up when I get some cashola available to do it. Ron, I wanted to know, your main character, Dr. Jennifer Bentley, are you basing this character on someone that you know in person who does this type of work?
Oh, no. No, that's one I just completely from my imagination.
Well, she sounds very believable, almost like, you know, someone that you might know personally that, someone that specializes in genetics
yeah.
and the like.
Well, I had to do a little bit of research into a little bit of genetics. I'm no expert, of course, but I had to get some familiar with some medical terms and to put in the book. And I got quite an education just from that. And, of course, Dr. Jennifer Bentley, she's, in her mid-30s, you know, very attractive. That's one of the reasons. It's also has to do a lot with romance because General Daniel Graves gets romantically involved with her and her into him. So they form an alliance. But, it was strictly from my imagination. I guess it was, I don't know, maybe from my own fantasies, I guess.
Okay, well, I look forward to reading the book. You folks have a good night.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, I got to ask you a question, Ron. Why is it that when people write novels and they have a leading lady, she's never ugly?
Well, I guess that's the way that's how men are, I guess.
Well, there are a lot of wonderful, wonderful people that happen to not be physically beautiful.
Definitely, yes.
Some of the great scientists of this world were truly ugly. I mean, look at Albert Einstein.
He had a strange hairdo.
Yeah, but you know, I really can't complain about his hair. At least he had hair. I don't have any left, hardly. Okay, 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. Those are the numbers to call if you have a question or a comment. Now, what I would be particularly interested in, folks, is this. I approach this when Ron or his publicist, somebody, sent me an email about this book. When I first got it, I thought, I don't know. You know, it's a novel. I don't know. Not that I haven't had novels on before, but I'm always the same every time someone sends me information about a new novel. It's sort of like, I don't know if I want to do this. But whenever I got into this a little bit and I saw what this book was about and saw how Ron had woven the whole extraterrestrial, UFO, and New World Order themes together, a lot of stuff came to the surface. You know, all of the stuff that I've read about the New World Order, all of the DVDs I've seen, all of that came to the surface. And 9 years of interviewing people came to the surface, where we have, as I described before, the various different factions that have taken positions on how the New World Order and the UFO phenomena may be interrelated. Now, we know they are interrelated, but how? Is the New World Order, are these the bad guys, and they are the ones having contact with the extraterrestrials, and they and the ETs are plotting against us? Is the New World Order, are they the good guys, and they're trying to protect us from bad extraterrestrials, and so forth and so on? So here's what I really would like to hear from you tonight. What I would like to hear from you tonight, we don't talk about the New World Order too often, because it's just not normally in our genre of things that we talk about. Here's what I want to hear from you tonight. What do you think is the relationship between the New World Order and UFOs? What do you think the relationship is? Do you think the New World Order is doing what they do related to UFOs in an attempt to protect us from hostile extraterrestrials? Or do you think they are doing what they do and they are plotting with the extraterrestrials against us? Which way does this cut? Which way does this go? True enough, what Ron has written is a novel, but it is also true that this novel is based upon a lot of the things that he found out in his research related to UFOs and to the New World Order. And so there are a lot of facts that are woven into this. I know you've got opinions, and I know you've got telephones, and I know you know it's a talk show. And I know you know the telephone numbers because they're on your screen if you're watching, and because I tell them to you if you're listening via radio. So the telephone number is 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. If you're in the USA or you're in Canada, use those numbers. If you're outside of the USA and Canada, you can use the flash message. John from the United Kingdom says in a flash message, Ron, that overpopulation is a coming issue in the 21st century. Do you describe in your book anything about this?
No, the overpopulation factor doesn't come in with the theme of the book. Of course, I believe there are, like you say, some controls. There are going to be some controls on population in the future, maybe through this some disease of a pandemic or whatever. They're going to, that's always the popular conspiracy about this. But that wouldn't be, is that too far-fetched, considering that the vaccines have been, a lot of them contaminated. So it's hard to tell what they're going to be doing, because things change, and when you think they're going to go one direction, they always seem like they're going to goes the other. there's always a possibility that, like I say, population control is going to come in, but it's not in my, it's not mentioned in my
book. Yeah, not a part of the book. All right, well, let's talk about it for just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
We can see right now, I'm not saying that what's going on right now is a New World Order attempt at population downsizing. But we can see with the current swine flu mess all around the world, we can see how it could happen. Right now, the World Health Organization has reported, the last number I saw, 1,554, or maybe it was 1,054 deaths.
Of the swine flu?
Yeah, from swine flu. Deaths, you know, from swine flu.
Yeah, that's, like I said, that's a low number because it seems like this was a kind of an intentional scare because they drummed it up. And we had more people that died from the regular flu, you know, like 30,000 a year that die from the regular flu. So they, now they're saying that, of course, this coming fall and winter, we'll have a pandemic, you know,
mm-hmm.
or a near pandemic, however you want to put it. So it seems like this is a lot of propaganda that's being thrown about, especially on the news media.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is that from watching what's happening with swine flu, we certainly can see how something like that could be used to downsize population. Now, I have not been able, and I want everyone to understand this, I have not been able to verify or corroborate this information because I just got it today. But I got an email today that in which it is stated that during the Bush administration, the president signed an agreement in which the World Health Organization can move into the USA and dictate that there will be forced vaccinations.
Mm.
Now, I don't know that such an agreement was signed, but I got that email. I also got an email that said that an attorney and a journalist have verified with the CDC that these will not be forced vaccinations once these vaccinations are available, that it will be on a completely voluntary basis. So I don't want to scare anybody, and I'm not speculating or speaking hypothetically. I'm just bringing everybody up to date here on the information that I have received, and I do want you to understand that both of these I'm giving to you raw. They're uncorroborated as far as the Kevin Smith Show is concerned. But some of you may know the corroborating data. And if you do, if you know the corroborating data, you need to share that with us. How is it that Dr. Bentley, in your book, comes to know that there is a planned false flag operation? Because she's working on genetics. She's not working on flight operations.
Right, right.
How does she come to know this?
She comes through it by another younger woman named Rachel. And she was also a secretary of General Graves. And they became friends, and she had gave her secretly some information that disturbed her, and gave it to Dr. Jennifer Bentley, and it also concluded the plans for the Super Soldier project. And anyway, this kind of disturbed her, and also she had some of her genetics too, also mixed in with an alien life form. But it turned out that this was, of course, along with General Graves' genetics, mixed in with the extraterrestrials, and it one turned out very much human-like. Anyway, she found information that that was her child, and she visited it, and that was started plan to escape from the S4 with the child and information. Mm-hmm. It gets much more involved and intriguing. It's just kind of a brief overview of that particular part, but it becomes it's really interesting how it's put together in the book.
All right, so you obviously had to do some research about the super soldier idea. Did you find some information out there about any programs where they're trying to do that?
It's basically pretty sparse, but I mean it's what you call it, like, again, unverified. But these are people that, like I said, I've a lot of this stuff I read a long time ago. I try to keep up with a lot of the present information, because I go into other areas of research, not just UFOs. But there seems to be, according to the information, and like I said, it's very sparse and scattered, and it's kind of vague, but there is a cloning operation going on.
All right. There's also a break going on. We have to step away for break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. More with Ron Riles. And maybe your calls.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. We are back. Let me remind you, if you have not yet subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do. It's absolutely free. There's no reason why you ought to be in the dark. And the way to not be in the dark is to be getting your K-Files e-zine. So go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and click where it says K-Files e-zine. Subscribe. It's free. No strings attached. All right, Ron, I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier. Now, earlier, you mentioned the Phoenix Lights. Were you living in this area at the time, and did you see the Phoenix Lights?
I was in the area at the time, but I didn't see the Phoenix Lights themselves. I was quite surprised when this, when I heard about it, you know, because I was inside probably doing the time doing my armchair research and so involved in that I didn't go outside to be able to see them. But of course they tried to explain it away as flares and that's when I said well, no way, you know. I saw the video footage and I said no way it's flares. And of course this guy works at the computer laboratory. I forgot.
Yeah, Jim Delatoso.
Yes, yes. But he went through a computer analysis of all these Phoenix lights, these glowing objects, and it says no way they could be flares. Of course, you know, flares they emit the smoke, and they eventually drop to the ground, and they don't stay in a perfectly aligned order, or nor do they move from one end of the state to the next.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and they did drop flares out in the test range, but that was I think that was an hour after the sightings. Mm-hmm. I think that was a ploy to try to explain away. But just like to me, that's nonsense explanations like that. It's just like saying, oh, every UFO you see is a planet Venus.
Yeah, or a weather balloon.
Oh, a weather balloon, yeah.
Okay, now, I tell people on the show that out here in the Phoenix area, we have things in the sky, weird things in the sky, on a rather frequent basis. It's not not every day, but it's very frequent. So let me ask you, why do you think that is? Why do you think Phoenix, Arizona seems to be such a hot spot?
Well, that's a good question. I really can't. No, I know that the Pima Indians has a legend of that there are these the people that come out of the mountain, reptilians. Every time they had some kind of a drought or they were in distress, and they would help them out.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's the first positive thing I've heard about the reptilian aliens. But seemingly like that they have been around in this area for a long time. And I kept my eye out. I used to live on Comet Avenue and in Glendale. But I had a two-story house. And I looked out one day towards the mountains. I don't know what they call. That's not the Australia Mountains, but there's another chain of mountains. And I saw a really strange thing. I saw this bright, glowing light that shot out of the mountain and sped away. I mean, a tremendous speed, but it came out like, I said, you know, this was something, this reminded me of the ancient Indian legends about this area, that the that there is has been an occupation here for a very long time.
That would not have been South Mountain, would it?
I'm sorry, what?
Would that have been from South Mountain?
Not South Mountain. That's it's west of here. It's I had a topographical map here. I could look it up, but
well, that's okay. But all of those mountains, the South Mountain Range, the Australia Mountains, the White Tank.
Quite a bit there.
Yeah.
And of course, it's odd that those mountains are Australia means star.
Mm-hmm.
So star, you know, Star Mountain, you know. So that's an interesting correlation.
All right, I'm going to ask you to speculate a little bit, but I'm asking you to speculate, having researched all of this stuff about underground installations and things like that in preparation for writing your book, you mentioned that the Pima Indians talk about these lizard people, these reptilians coming up out of the ground when they need help. Before them, you have the Hohokam.
Hohokam, yes.
And these were Native Americans who preceded the Pima. They had drawings of these things.
Things in the book is a Native American theme in my book. Of course, mentioned the Blue Star Kachina. I hope I'm not getting off track here, but the Blue Star Kachina is mentioned in my book, and what Kachina means is spirit. A Kachina doll can represent anything, because the Indians, the Native American Indians, see everything as spirit. So it can be a tree, or a rock, or a plant, or an ancestor, or a star. And the book one of the themes of the book that weaves into this thing is about the prophecies of the Native American prophecies and the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And Blue Star Kachina is one of those things that has been around for a while. They think that this Blue Star has already visited this area of space, and it's called a home 17P, and has a seven year orbit in our solar system. So, but it's, the Indian legend says it's supposed to be followed by a red star, and this blue star, of course, representative of change of you know, change, and the red star is the change itself.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the blue star is a harbinger of change.
Well, let's go back to what I was talking about with these Native American legends in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Their stories, I shouldn't say legends, lore, their body of information,
mm-hmm.
both the Pima, the Hohokam, the Hopi,
mm-hmm.
all of the native groups that have lived in this area, did rock carvings, we call them petroglyphs,
uh-huh.
that show these reptilian-looking beings, and in some uh-huh. cases coming up out of the ground, partially materialized, some cases fully materialized. Do you think, and then here we are in the 21st century, sitting here in the Phoenix area, and you and I both know that we see strange things in the sky here, and you just gave us an account of seeing this light come up out of the mountain and go
right.
into the sky at a tremendous rate of speed. Do you think it's possible that these Native Americans were telling the absolute truth, and that maybe we are sitting on top of an underground base or colony of these extraterrestrials?
I think that's very, very possible. Yes. Is it Fort Huachuca? I think is it.
That's right.
Fort Huachuca. Supposedly, those one of those things that the underground underground tunnels. The underground is one of the underground bases. They have an underground installation there, I should say, and they're connected by tunnels to other area bases like S4, Area 51, Dulce.
Yeah, but now that would be our tunnels and our bases. I'm talking about, is it possible that there is like this ancient colony?
They've come across these ancient tunnels while using these boring machines. And, yeah, and around here, the thing is, of course, that's something I need to do is more research on that, if there's anything around here. But I feel that there is because of the Native Americans have really no reason to hoax anything or dream up something, because it's usually based on what they see, you know, as facts, and they can interpret them. You know, they interpret them their way. Just like the Bible, sometimes you have to read through it, the archaic language, to understand some of the what was actually happening, like chariots of fire and flying scrolls and so forth, which would be cylinder-shaped ships.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all cylinder craft. But that's an area that I would have to do a lot more investigation into to really come up with any conclusive answer to. But I feel that there are. It's just like an intuitive type of thing.
Well, look. There are people that disagree with my position on this, but it is my position. And that is, you can't draw what you haven't seen. And as an example, I'll ask my audience all over the world to get out a pencil and paper and draw me a Wakandivo. Okay? So draw me a picture of a Wakandivo. Well, you can't do it, and the reason you can't do it is because you've never seen one.
Right. Yeah.
And you can only draw what you've seen. Now you can fictionalize what you draw. That's true. But it's based on something you've really seen.
Right. Yeah. There's cave drawings all over the planet. In case showing flying discs, you know, they can be interpreted no other way. There's people on the ground pointing their fingers up to the this thing above them, you know, and it's shaped like a disc.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is something that people have been seeing. In fact, I don't know if the Air Force still does this, but they used to teach UFO. Classes. They had the officers take a study in UFOs, and of course, naturally, they were pilots. They had to know what to do and what to encounter. But it goes into also goes into history that goes back 47,000 years ago. So there again, there is another indication of something that's going on, has been going on for thousands of years.
I came across. Photograph of a cave drawing in Japan of an almond-shaped delta-winged flying craft, 10,000 BC. 10,000 BC. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Don't back, and we are on Final Approach, meaning, of course, we only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. My guest this evening is Ron Riles. And I want to remind you that tomorrow night is when I'm going to do what I had planned to do last week, and that is we're going to be talking about these sky serpents. Weird, weird, weird stuff. Sky serpents. It's in old newspaper accounts. from right here in the United States as well as around the world. It's also in ancient myth and legend, and it's also in modern videos, and it's also in the minds of people who have seen them. I already got a telephone call from someone who said, I saw one of those when I lived in Florida. And so we're going to be doing that show on Tuesday night, tomorrow night, okay? So you want to be sure you tune in for that. Okay, Ron, we just have a few minutes left. One of the things that we hear a lot about today is that the UFO phenomena is really just super top secret U.S. Air Force aircraft being test flown. And I grant you that some of it surely is that. Without question, some of it is that. However, we were talking about these ancient drawings, these ancient carvings on cave walls and so forth that show very clearly ancient flying objects. By ancient, they look very modern, but they're ancient. The carvings themselves, the petroglyphs and the cave drawings, they're very ancient. I just mentioned one from 10,000 B.C., this is in Japan, and it's very, very, a very modern craft. It's not, it looks more modern than the stuff we're flying. And, it's from 10,000 B.C. So while some of what we see surely is our stuff, some of it surely is not. So, in all of your research that you did for this book, did you come to any conclusions about who these extraterrestrials are, where they come from, what they want?
Where they come from and what they want?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there's the Palladians, or what they like to be called as the Palayarans. I examined the video footage off of that, and they're supposedly the friendly type, the kind of the Nordic type, and Billy Meyer has had extensive contact, and I got nearly all of his books on the contact notes. They're trying to, bring into awareness gradually to the populations of Earth that there are other life forms. And they're not alone on the other. I mean, and that's a slow, gradual process they're trying to instigate. But there are others, supposedly Sirians from the star system Sirius, Canis Major constellation, Tau Ceti. There was one incident of Tau Ceti. Craft had crashed and had taken this human-looking extraterrestrial, very much human-looking, but they had, what did we do? We dissected him, you know? That's the story that goes with that. The thing is, there are the negative ones, of course, some of the reptilian groups, the Greys. There's different factions of Greys. I mean, there are different types. There's the one with the almond-shaped eyes, and there's the one with the rounder, more rounder eyes, and there's the taller ones. There's the praying mantis type looking. There's different. I mentioned this in the book that there are various extraterrestrial races visiting the Earth, and some of them have different agendas, and some of them are benevolent, want to help. Others are indifferent. They're just here to observe and to take samples. Others are here to influence our own government, the factions of government, or certain factions that are working with these extraterrestrial negative types, though. That's the sad part of it, is that we've supposedly made a some kind of treaty, not by the will of the people, but by this special faction of our government, which is very well financed, and they had made a treaty of exchanging technology for our DNA pool. They're interested in our genetics, very much interested in our genetics, because supposedly their own race is dying. They have a very much of a deterioration or of their biological bodies. Their bodies are just are not going to hold up. They're going extinct. That's what they what it is. So,
all right, well, now let me ask you something.
But of course, there's been a violation of the treaty and so forth, because the government supposedly said that, you know, you can only do a certain amount, and we're going to need a list of who you're doing, who you're abducting. But certain faction of Greys are going ahead and doing what they want anytime they want. So there's a website called UFO Wars, and there are actually... Some of the guys are up there are fighting each other. I mean, the good guys and the bad guys, you know? The ones that
That's Ed Grimsley. Ed Grimsley with his night vision equipment. And I know Ed and have actually watched UFOs up in the night sky with very, very high up. But with the night vision equipment that Ed has. All right, now let me ask you a question. Have you ever, to your knowledge, had a personal encounter with an extraterrestrial?
Not to my knowledge. I have no recollection. If I did, they pretty much wiped my memory clean. However, that... When 1964, 65, I can't remember exact which year it was, but when I was just a teenager, I may have had some kind of abduction experience there, but I don't have any recollection of it. But and I can only reflect back as a memory that and speculate that they may have taken me and brought me back and wiped my memory clean. I don't know. That's about the only one I would probably speculate if I ever had any contact with, which I don't have any memory at all whatsoever.
All right, so, Ron, we're just about out of time. I want folks to know where they can get your book. They can get it at Amazon.com, right?
Oh yes, Amazon.com, Barnes and Noble, many of the other book outlets, and also my website, which is redmoon2012.com. That's redmoon2012.com.
And the title of the book, ladies and gentlemen, is Red Moon: Looming of a New World Order. Ron, I want to thank you for being with me on the show tonight. It's been fabulous, interesting, and if you will, just stay on the line with me for a minute as I close the show.
Okay, thank you, Kevin.
All right, folks, there you have it. Ron Riles, Red Moon, Looming of a New World Order. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.